We are here on The Geek Generation, Episode 6. We are coming to you after a whole slew of problems trying to get this episode ready. I'm on the phone with Todd Tiuli right now from Dangerous Memories. How are you, Todd?
Excellent. How are you, Rob B. The Geek G?
I am great, despite our little technical difficulties getting into this. On one side, you are probably pleased that I sound a little bit differently today because I do have a new microphone, so yay for that.
Yay.
On the other hand, my headphones were causing me some issues last week recording with Brian and decided to give me some problems going right into this episode, so I'm rocking the iPod earbuds and hoping that that's not causing too much of a problem. So we will see how this episode goes, and hopefully we won't have any major issues as we go through. Yeah, I'm all out of sorts as well. I'm all hopped up on caffeine. And that's what I'm doing right now to try and counteract my recent vertigo spells.
Vertigo spells?
Yeah, starting back
like Lucille 2 from Arrested Development.
Starting back in February, I started having these weird spells of vertigo, and the last 2 days they were so bad that I passed out on the couch each day around 6 o'clock and took like a 30 to 45 minute nap.
And what happens during this vertigo?
It was really bad when it first started, and it literally felt like I was on a boat and the boat was rocking back and forth, and it would come and go, but it hasn't been that bad recently, but it does feel like my brain is swimming inside of my head at times, and it makes me really tired, and I guess that's why I passed out. So one of my friends suggested that I drink some caffeinated tea every 2.5 hours, and I've been doing that today, although I've capped myself off at this point so I can go to sleep, but I'm actually feeling pretty good right now, so that's the plus side.
Wait, so if this is an ongoing thing, am I in 9 minutes, I'm expecting you to just not be there?
There is the possibility of that happening. I haven't passed out yet, but if I do, you'll be the first to know right now.
I definitely will, yeah. Yeah. I'll just hear the thud.
So I suppose we should probably start getting into the content of the show. I get scared every week when the show starts to come around, even though I'm excited to do it, because I'm like, well, what the hell am I going to talk about this week? But the notes quickly fill up, and then I feel like I have too much to talk about. So we do have a lot to get to, including...
There's no such thing as too much.
No, there's never too much. We do have a whole bunch of things to do today, including our usual rigmarole, as well as an in-depth discussion of Inception, which you and I and a couple other friends got to see in IMAX this past weekend.
It's true.
Yeah, and it was a good time. So if we go right into our listener emails to start off, let's see right here. We didn't get too many emails answering our poll question. We do have more in regards to Inception, though, that we'll be talking about later on the show. Our question that we asked last week is, what is your favorite animated superhero movie? And before I go into the listener emails, do you have one, Todd?
I do.
And what would that be?
Oh, you want me to go first? I see how it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't want you to just piggyback off of the listener emails.
I feel you.
Yeah.
Well, I know... Since you never actually explicitly said like comic book related, probably a lot of people say things like, you know, The Incredibles or something. But as far as like the DC animated, you know, and whatnot, I would probably have to go with, I love Mask of the Phantasm, but both you guys said that, and I don't want to pull that crap.
If that's your favorite, though, don't let us step on it.
It kind of is, but I have one that I love more because I love the story that it's based on.
Okay.
And that's New Frontier.
Oh, the Justice League movie.
Yes, that came out like 2 years ago or so.
That's an interesting choice. Why do you choose that one?
I love the graphic novel. I just love the story. I love the character design. Like, I love the old school, you know, 50s feel to it. Like, even the tattoo I got, Green Lantern, is from the New Frontier.
Oh, very cool.
I'm a big fan of New Frontier. I love the story, and I just thought it was a great cartoon. I didn't have, like, you know, the typical Kevin Conroy or, you know, those voices, Tim Daly, who I love, but I think the voice actors just, you know, were good enough that I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's an interesting choice. I actually own that one, too, on Blu-ray, of course. Yay.
Yes, totally.
Oh, Blu-ray.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's take a look at the listener emails then. We only have two. One of them is actually our first one. That's a Twitter response from @reh311 on Twitter. I could say his full name. I don't know if he wants it on the air, so we'll let him make that call for next time. He says, not really in the vein of the typical Marvel DC animated films you're looking for, but my favorite is The Incredibles.
See what I tell you.
Exactly. You're right on there. So that's totally acceptable. Superhero movie, animated, that fits the criteria. Oh, yeah. It's awesome. And it's maybe my favorite Pixar movie.
That's bullcrap, but okay.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion, I suppose. Second email comes in from Jaron Rabideau, who I think I'm going to start calling Jaron number one, just because Jaron's emailed in every time we've asked a question, is always giving feedback. I'm pretty sure he's our number one fan. So
sounds like it.
Yeah, I might shorten it to Jaron number one from now on. He gives us a fairly lengthy response in regards to the question, amongst other things. First off, I'm offended that you guys talked about best Whedon characters and didn't even mention Dr. Horrible. Shame on you. Well, we, as in Brian, I don't know too much about Joss Whedon characters, so I'm going to put that on Brian, but I enjoyed Dr. Horrible. Have you seen it?
I love Dr. Horrible. I have the soundtrack on my iPod.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm in your camp, though, when it comes to Whedon.
Yeah?
I'm not really a big fan.
Not,
like,
too
I'm not
exposed?
A huge fan of any of it.
Yeah.
Like, I like Buffy. Angel, you know, was okay. I couldn't care less for Firefly and Serenity and stuff.
Yeah, I haven't even seen any of that. The only thing Whedonized that I think I've seen is Angel, really.
Yeah.
See, Jaron also says, second, I think you're wrong about Smallville being the longest-running sci-fi show. I could be wrong, it's all about semantics, but I think that title belongs to Doctor Who, which has been running since the 60s with well over 700 episodes. Now, I'm not too familiar with Doctor Who either, but as far as I know, that's a British show, isn't it?
Yes.
And I believe they had almost a reboot of that in the same vein of, like,
Battlestar,
right. So it's not considered necessarily the same series either.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Like Jaron said, that is about semantics. And I think when they were talking about the longest running sci-fi show, they were speaking of things produced in America solely,
yeah.
I would guess.
And also, with Smallville, it is one long story spread over 10 seasons now. Doctor Who, it's like, you know, every few years is like a different doctor. You know, there's like little movies, there's a bunch of different stuff, you know?
Okay, so yeah, like Jaron said, definitely semantics. He's probably right in that maybe worldwide it is the longest running sci-fi show, but as far as American television goes, Smallville will be taking that crown as far as I know.
Yes.
All right. Jaron also says, anyway, just writing in with my vote for best animated superhero movie, The Incredibles. It captured the spirit of comic book heroes without using any specific character that fans would get upset about if they didn't get the details right. The animation, although not hand-done, is fantastic, and it's overall a highly entertaining movie. Other than that, I really draw a blank. Return of the Joker, maybe. Perhaps The Animatrix, if that counts as superheroes. Good show, Jaron. Return of the Joker, I know, is the Batman Beyond movie, and that's one of my favorite ones, although I don't think I would consider The Animatrix a superhero movie.
I can't get into Batman Beyond at all. I've
really?
Tried so many times, yeah. I even tried to watch that, The Return of the Joker, and I can't stand it.
See, while I am very opposed to Dick Grayson stepping into the role of Batman or having anyone else under the cowl,
Man, you must hate the comics now then, huh?
Yeah, I know. I don't really read any of those,
oh,
but
they're so good.
To me, Bruce Wayne is Batman, and it's not the other way around, so you can't put someone else in the suit and have it be the same.
Can I take a moment to pause here and say that it's incredible that you didn't tell me about any of the answers, and I knew both of them would be The Incredibles?
Yeah, right, I think that's pretty impressive, actually.
I'm pretty much a genius. I'm not gonna lie to you.
I think people sometimes reach for the one that they think no one else is gonna pick, and yet it somehow seems to be the one everyone chooses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can, actually, I have to go back to one more thing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
This is back to Joss Whedon again. I don't understand why, because I think even Brian mentioned this, I don't understand why they would give him the Avengers when his, like, you know, directorial effort, Serenity, bombed, you know? Nothing he does has lasted. I mean, Buffy and Angel did, but those are so cult, like, cult status, you know?
Right, so it's almost like, what are they basing their decision on to give him that spot?
Yeah. I really don't understand. Besides the fact that he wrote a popular comic for a while, you know, it's kind of like the same problem I have with everyone's like, if Jonah Nolan doesn't direct the Superman movie, then it's going to be worthless. And I was like, what are you basing this off of? He's never directed a movie before.
Right. That's like, true.
just because so many people are like, he's a good writer. And I was like, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean he's going to be a good director.
If anything, and I might be reaching here, I would think that Whedon has experience with an ensemble cast.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So, but I think that's probably reaching as an explanation.
Yeah, it's just putting so much stock in him that I don't see where it's coming from.
I agree.
But it happens all the time. I mean, Peter Jackson to do Lord of the Rings.
True.
You know, like, where did that come from? He was doing those really low budget horror movies that were awesome, but where did Lord of the Rings come from out of that? You know,
or right? Well, yeah, and we were talking about Jon Favreau doing Iron Man.
Well, yeah, but even before that, he did Zathura and Elf, so he had some big budget.
True.
You know, experience. Especially with Zathura. That was all sci-fi and action-y and whatnot.
I've not seen that. I don't think I've even heard of that.
It's like that. It's not Jumanji, but it's like Jumanji. There's a board game, you know?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's like that. No one ever remembers he did that, but yeah, he did Zathura and Elf and, you know, Maid and whatnot.
It rings a few bells, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, those are our listener emails. We're going to move on into our usual geek outs and freak outs. So, Todd, I'll give you the opportunity first. Are you mimicking my special ed sound that I like to play?
Yeah, I like that.
Yay!
It always catches me off guard because I'm always thinking the guest is doing that, and I'm like, wait, that's not right.
Yeah, the first time I put that in, someone thought that was the co-host, but... I will give you the opportunity first to let us know what you're geeking out on.
Yay!
Nice. I have two.
Okay.
The first isn't really anything. Well, it's something. It's a big deal, and I want to say it because I completely forgot to say it on my podcast. It is a very special woman in my life's birthday tomorrow, and that's my mother. It's my
mom's birthday. That's a nice happy birthday to Todd's mom.
And she listens whenever. She's been listening to The Generation.
Well, then, hi to Todd's mom. This is Rob, and I am just saying happy birthday to you then.
She likes the show a lot because she listens to Dangerous Memories, and then since I was on there, she started listening to your show, and she really likes it.
Well, that's how we get new listeners. We get their moms to listen.
She's a hip broad. She knows what she's doing.
So she knows what we're talking about, too. It's not like we're just speaking Greek.
No. It's speaking Greek. Oh, okay. I think she just likes listening to podcasts.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. But the other thing I'm geeking out on, and this is pretty hardcore within the past few days, is The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. I saw that you tweeted about reading that in Boston the other day.
Yeah. I got my beautiful fiance, Kate, bought me the first volume of the graphic novel. And I read it in like, you know, a day and bought volumes 2 and 3. And I finished volume 2 today and started, I'm like halfway through 3. And it's amazing. I cannot wait for the show now, like even more.
Yeah, building up the anticipation.
Yeah, and there's like 12 volumes out right now, so I'm going to be good for a little bit.
Did you see the Comic-Con trailer for the series?
No, I didn't want to spoil anything.
Oh, really? Wow, so you're going intense with it.
Yeah, like I looked at the pictures because I wanted to see, you know, who looked like who and, you know, who would play what. And like I like the guy who they got as Lee a lot. I liked him in Love Actually. I love Love Actually. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care who knows it.
Is Love Actually is which one?
The British romantic comedy. Ultimate romantic comedy.
I'm thinking of Definitely Maybe, which I liked, actually.
I've always wanted to see that.
Yeah. Oh, we're going off into a chick flick tangent, I think.
I apologize. No, that's right. But he's in Love Actually, and he's the main character, and I really like him. But reading this, I would have just preferred someone else.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, I'm sure he'll be awesome because he seems like a cool guy.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that particular series. I've said before, I'm not a huge horror fan and zombie stuff specifically, so.
Yeah, my good friend Yanel Francois isn't either, and he's obsessed with it now too.
Really?
Yeah, he's really not into horror or zombies at all, and he's really loving it.
So if you were going to describe the comic series to someone else, would you even put it into the horror genre necessarily?
No, I really wouldn't. I think it's more of like a character study on these characters who got thrust into this problem.
And that's what people tend to talk about when they're expressing concerns about how the series is going to be on AMC, when they really can't get away with too much. But
I don't know. I mean, they get away with a lot on Breaking Bad and even like Mad Men to an extent with the swearing and stuff.
Huh.
But I mean, some of the stuff that happens in Breaking Bad is pretty messed up.
Oh, all
like
right.
In the first season, this isn't a spoiler because you don't know who it is or what the context of it is, but in the first season of Breaking Bad, they're disintegrating a body in a bathtub,
mm-hmm.
and they put the wrong type of acid in, and it eats away through the floor.
Oh,
and they're walking through the hallway, and all of a sudden, the bathtub just falls through the ceiling and lands in front of them, and there's like blood and body parts everywhere that just like collapses to the ground, and it's disgusting and amazing.
Wow. So clearly they have some precedent set where they can get away with zombie gore.
Yeah, and they drop the SH bomb all the time on AMC, which is like the swear of choice, it seems, in Walking Dead.
Well, that'll work out for them. South Park fortunately allowed that to be used more frequently.
Yep.
Yeah. So thank you, South Park.
But I can't wait. Walking Dead is amazing, and everyone should read it right now.
Awesome. All right. What I'm geeking out over this week is a show I just started watching probably within the last week or so, and that's a show on Sci-Fi called Warehouse 13. Have you heard of that at all?
I have heard of it because the broad from Smallville's in it, or in the one episode of Smallville.
Allison Scagliotti?
Yes, that's her.
Yes. She actually introduced me to the show. I could guess you could say, not personally, I don't know her, but I heard her on an episode of Nerdist recently, and she was really good on the show. And a while back, the PSN store had offered the pilot episode of Warehouse 13 as a free download. So I had that on my system for months, and I never got around to watching it. I heard the Nerdist show, and I was like, all right, well, I'll give it a try. I'll watch it. I think it's really fun, actually. It's a little corny.
It looks really silly.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a comedy. The intent of it is a comedy. And I'm pretty sure Allison said on Nerdist that instead of getting the usual sci-fi writers, they got comedy writers and they just add the sci-fi elements into it. Mm. So it comes across a little corny at times. The special effects are the caliber of a sci-fi movie or a sci-fi series. But at the same time, it's a really fun show. And the premise is basically to former Secret Service agents that end up going to work for this warehouse where they basically shelve and store away artifacts that belong to famous people or older people that you would be familiar with from history, such as Edgar Allan Poe's pen, which can manifest things when you write with it, such as, let's see if I can think of another one. Lewis Carroll's looking glass mirror that reflects the person using it and actually creates a separate personality. So it's all really cool stuff like that.
So it's almost kind of like, well, not really, but almost like how National Treasure takes facts from history and kind of spins it into its own thing.
Sure.
Except more sci-fi-y.
Yes, that's a perfect description.
What was that?
That would be my text message, which is a one-up sound, and I forgot to turn my cell phone off before the show.
It's unprofessional.
Yeah. Well, you think that's unprofessional. I'm going to be listening back to this later and think I have a text message.
Actually, before we go on, in my first episode ever of Dangerous Memories, I did the exact same thing. I didn't shut off my phone. And my text message noise at that time was Chewbacca, you know, growl.
Oh, yeah.
And listening back, it happens twice in a row. And everyone I know who listened to it were like, what is that cat doing in the background?
Who has a cat that sounds like Chewbacca? That's crazy. All right, well, that's my geek out for the week. Warehouse 13 is currently in season 2 running on Sci-Fi, so check that out. Do you have a freak out this week?
Oh, freak out! Yes.
And that would be?
I like the one word answers.
Yes.
I mentioned this on my podcast yesterday that Brandon Routh still really wants to be considered for Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't like that there's been almost no talk of anyone in like the Nolan camp of bringing him back. I mean, you can still have him and not do the same, you know, Bryan Singer storyline.
True.
I mean, everyone I heard complain about Superman Returns, most of them said they still liked Routh. They just didn't care for, like, you know, the kid angle and stuff. And it just bums me out that he's not going to get a chance because of another storyline that people didn't like.
See, I can't say that I was a fan of Routh because when I watched the movie, not story aside, Superman is an icon and has this larger-than-life presence. And when I was watching Routh on the screen as Superman, I never felt that through the picture.
Really? I did. I thought he was a really good Superman. Like, I thought, and Clark, obviously. But, I mean, like, I don't know. He had the mannerisms down pat. Like, the scene where Lois knocks, her purse knocks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And his glasses falls off. And he does that perfect, like, almost sit up like he's going to reveal that he's Superman.
Yep.
And there's so many parts like that that I think he was just a really good choice. I don't know.
I think he was a better Clark Kent in the style that they wanted him to be, in that same Christopher Reeve style.
Yeah.
I want to see a much more modern Superman. And he might be able to pull that off, but I didn't see it in Superman Returns at all.
I think so. Like, imagine if they did go, like, the more, you know, realistic modern approach, but with Brandon Routh. I think that'd be good. Like, I think you should give him a chance, you know? Hmm. At least let him audition. Because it sounds like, I mean, because he keeps saying how he would love to be Superman again.
Right. Obviously. Well, you gotta love someone that's dedicated to the role.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I would just rather see, and this is the same problem I have with Mark Ruffalo, I would rather see a little bit of continuity, even though it's not the same story, as opposed to every few years having something different.
Right. Well, see, I'm in such hatred of Superman Returns to the point where I didn't buy it and I just want to see it tossed out and forgotten about that I almost don't want to see any element from it brought into a new one.
I just want him. Everyone else. Actually, him and James Marsden, even though his character would not even be close to in it because, obviously, they would ditch that whole thing.
Right.
But I really liked his character. Like, I thought it was really cool that he's supposed to be almost like the antagonist to Superman, but he's such a good guy.
Like, right, you can't necessarily hate him.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, just get rid of that crap Kate Bosworth. She was awful.
She was awful.
And just, I would just, I don't know, I would like to see Brandon Routh. See, I would like to see what he would do with Superman that wasn't based on the Donner Superman.
Hmm.
And like I said, like, I liked Ang Lee's Hulk. I've mentioned this on my podcast. I don't love it, but I really liked it. And then they reboot it. So I was like, oh, cool. And then this one comes out, and I loved the Incredible Hulk. I loved Edward Norton, and I was like, great. Now I'll see him in the Avengers movie. Nope, not going to happen. Now we're getting Mark Ruffalo. I'm like, great. I mean, right. I start to like these people, and then they change it. I'm sick of all this reboot crap.
That's a fair point. I can't necessarily argue with that.
Especially so soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not even like Superman Returns. It didn't do that bad either. Like, it didn't do as well as they thought it would, but I mean, it wasn't a bomb by any means.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. They are kind of reboot happy in Hollywood right now, and I guess that's just the direction they want to go in.
Like, the fact that like X-Men and Spider-Man are getting rebooted right now, when those did well, it doesn't make any sense to me.
That's true. I don't know. It's just, yeah, that's the situation Hollywood's in, and they feel like they have to start everything up and refresh it when something starts going downhill a little bit, and I don't know. I don't think it's always the wisest decision, but it's the one they're making for now, I guess.
I think it hurts. Like, I was listening to a podcast this morning. I think it might have been Slash Film. And they were talking about being in the room, Hall H, when they were announcing the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction to Mark Ruffalo was almost kind of tepid. Like, the claps weren't nearly as loud as for when Jeremy Renner came out.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I think that was two parts because we had a bigger suspicion that Ruffalo was definitely going to be cast. Also, in Robert Downey's joke about reprising the role of, I think that caught the audience off guard and they were expecting Norton there, so they were disappointed.
I think there's just more people disappointed in the fact that it's not going to be Edward Norton, like, well, as a whole.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm in that camp for sure.
I mean, I really think they're shooting themselves in the foot with all these reboots and stuff.
I agree.
Especially when Tobey Maguire, I mean, as much as I didn't like Tobey Maguire, to replace him with someone that people really haven't heard of, I just don't see how that's going to help at all.
Yeah, there's no...
That's not to say that I have anything against Andrew Garfield. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Right. And Spider-Man 3, while it was a terrible movie, it was also Raimi's first misstep in the franchise, so why not just keep moving forward?
Yeah, and they were moving forward, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they were like, Sony was like, "Oh, we're dropping Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire. We're going a whole new direction."
Yeah, and there was a whole lot of discussion about that, but I don't want to go on too much about the reboot stuff just because we are going a little time heavy for the first part of the show. No, that's all right. It's always good to get in the debates and really delve into things.
It won't happen again.
No, not a problem. I'm going to skip over my freak out of the week just based on
what
time.
Can't you just tell us what it was?
I can. It wasn't necessarily anything geeky, and that's why I feel okay skipping over it. It was something a little more personal that I don't know if the audience would really care about anyway.
I would care about it.
Do you want to hear it?
I would love to hear it.
All right. Well, I keep having this debate with myself over what kind of a show I want to put out there. And I really like talking about all the geeky stuff. And at times, I really want to use the show as a platform to vent and kind of put myself out there because I don't feel like I do that enough in my own life. So I don't know if people listening necessarily care about hearing my issues and my problems or if they really just want to hear the geeky stuff. And that's a debate that's going on. And I had one particular issue the other day where I was over the house of my two best friends, and I don't know if they're going to listen to this or if it's going to cause any issues because I'm not going to speak badly of them. It's more something about me as a person. We were hanging out, just having dinner and stuff, and I was talking to one of my friends, and all of a sudden, my other friend was drinking like a cranberry apple juice that he made from a powder, which I didn't even know you could make cranberry juice from a powder. Did you?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so I mean, I know about they have the cans where you can mix it up and stuff. They have the frozen concentrate stuff. I didn't know they had a juice powder.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Well, yeah. I didn't know about that flavor.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. As far as like Crystal Light or anything like that, maybe it was something like that. I thought it was just supposed to be making cranberry apple juice from the powder. So he takes a swig of it and his face just totally changes because he said all the powder settled on the bottom and it was the nastiest taste he'd ever had. And it really affected him for a good 5 minutes at least. So he hands the glass to his fiance and says, here, you should have some of this because it, and just experience it because it tastes awful. So she so she takes a sip too and is just like, we know the reaction that's coming. It's the same reaction. It tastes absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
So now I'm the only other person in the room and he goes to hand the glass to me and says, you have to try this. It's terrible, which right there is just an invitation to say no, because I don't want to taste something that's horrible. That's like, experience or not, I'm not one of those people that has to experience everything just to experience it. I'm not an experimenter.
I feel so the same.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reason I consider myself straight edge. Like, I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I never have touched any of that stuff because I don't need to. I just know it's not for me.
I partake in drinking. I haven't in a long time, but I don't do anything else like that either.
Yeah. So a person knows what's for them and what's not at times. I mean, I'll go out and have like life experiences and stuff like that, but it's not like I'm a total homebody and don't experience anything out of my own comfort zone. But I know if I've watched the reaction of two other people that I don't want to drink this, that's fairly certain to me. I'm just about to eat dinner. I don't want to cleanse my palate with nasty. So I say, no, I don't want any of that. And he's like, all right. Well, he's like, but no, you really have to try this. And I'm like, well, no. And then it's starting to fester in me a little bit. And then most of the time after two, people will drop it. But he offers it again, says, no, you really have to. And at that point, for me, the type of person that I am, I have such, what's that?
You flip the table?
Not exactly. I have such an issue with, that would have been pretty funny though. I have such a peer pressure issue that when someone does that, and it's no fault of theirs, like, if they listen to this, they're going to feel like they did something horrible, and they really didn't. It's no fault of theirs. It's just I have a problem expressing these things to my friends, and maybe I feel more comfortable doing it in a show where they can't hear me directly.
Yes.
But I feel threatened, and I know I'm not being threatened, but something inside of me retreats, and I put up a wall, and there's no way to make me not want to do something more than to try and pressure it on me, because I shut down as a human being. And I don't know if that's just me or if that's...
I feel the same exact way.
Yeah, so maybe that's like a geeky thing and that gets away with me talking about that in the show. So, well, I don't know.
It's not that geeky. And I feel if you're going to have these like venting sessions, maybe something to do would make like bonus episodes with a lot of venting.
Yeah.
Because I would love to listen to it. But I'm sure a lot of, you know, the normal people who come to listen to the Geek Generation, they might not, you know, be as inclined to listen.
That's true. I mean, I'm sure there are some people that are here for the news, and that's pretty much it. I have people that tell me they listen to pretty much the news segment, and that's all they care about, and that's fine. But at the same time, I want to connect with my audience, and I want to...
Oh, no, I totally understand.
Yeah, I want people to know us as people and not just voices that are giving them news and all that stuff. Like...
Maybe make chapters in your podcast.
And I try to do that a little bit in the sense that we split it up with commercial breaks and whatnot.
Well, because I know on GarageBand and stuff, you can drop in actual marks where you can actually hit next and go to the next chapter.
That's true. I know that's possible, but at the same time, I spend so much time in posts that I don't know if I even want to bother with that.
Oh, yeah, I completely understand.
I don't
think you should do it. I'm just saying for the people... Like, if you do want to have venting sessions, and people are going to be like, oh, great, here's this again.
Right.
So like, maybe I myself love listening to that type of stuff.
Yeah, and I like it, too. I do. I want to know the people I'm listening to. I almost feel like I become friends with them in a way without, like, the first time we met was at my barbecue this year, and I didn't know you, but yet from listening to your show, felt I knew you well enough to hang out with you and know we'd be cool, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So
I mean, I didn't know you.
Yeah, that was a big scary
meat candy. I've been thinking about that meat candy so much lately. I want some so bad.
All right, now if you're gonna go around and toss a term like meat candy around, and two guys are talking,
I really liked your meat candy.
I really feel like that requires explanation to the audience at this point now, because you went there. You can't just drop meat candy and expect it not to have the innuendos that it implies.
Can't explain it. I don't even know what it was. It was just tasty.
Honestly, they're I pick them up at Stop and Shop. It's just a sausage looking thing called Chinese teriyaki links, basically.
Done. I'm getting them today.
Yeah, they're fantastic. So meat candy, eat that, people. Anyway, but at the same time, like I was saying, I do want to create a show that really immerses our audience and wants them to care about the show. And I do have that debate in my head, so maybe the audience is willing to give us some feedback on that. Please do. I mean, send things in to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com. Hit me up on at Geek Generation on Twitter. I really do want audience feedback because I want to create this show for what you're interested in. And if you don't care about us as people and you just want us to be voices and talk about it, I can do that. If you want to just hear news and all that stuff, if you do want to hear about us, that's fine. And I can do that too. But, it's a show created for the audience. So I want their contributions, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I wish our podcast would get more feedback of what people like and what they don't like. Actually, no, not what they don't like, because that's all I hear. That's all I get. Is people just telling me what they don't like.
You can't get any negative feedback on your podcast. It's wonderful.
I beg to differ. I highly beg to differ.
That's a shame. So we should wrap up the first segment. We're almost halfway through what a normal show would be. I have a feeling we're going to go for a while today because we still
Inception spoiler room.
We have a spoiler room. That's a new segment coming on later in the show for you listening now. We're going to be stepping into the spoiler room for the first time and having...
I hope you have a sound effect of a door closing.
Oh, I have a whole bunch of theater of the mind things going on there. We have a keypad to punch in, a big metal door, and a voice that welcomes us and all that stuff.
I just got so happy. You have no
idea. Oh, yeah. It's going to be fantastic. Of course, you won't hear it till the final episode. Well, I'm not going to give all the secrets away of how I do the show. I'm going to totally take away the theater of the mind by telling people how I do it. But anyway, we have one more thing to do before we go to our first break, and it's your favorite thing ever, Todd.
Is it another new game that you love to throw at me?
Not necessarily a new game, but we are going to play Top 3 again.
Nice. I like Top 3.
All right. Well, Top 3 is my favorite game, and I do want suggestions from the audience on new games we can play. I have a few in mind, but we're going to go play our favorite Top 3.
Three, two, one.
And today's top three category for you, Mr. Tiuli, is I would like you to give me the top three overrated movies ever created.
Ever?
Ever. The top three ones that get all the acclaim from fans or critics or anyone, and you just think are total crap.
All right. I got them right now.
Wow. Really? All three just like that?
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
I have them right now.
All right. Fire them out for me.
And one of them might make you mad. I'm not sure.
You're welcome to. It might. We'll see.
Well, it's Boondock Saints.
Okay.
Number one. Which I loved in high school. Yes. That's very important to this. The fact that people still think it's the greatest thing ever just sickens me.
So you feel it's an immature movie?
Are you kidding me? It's incredibly immature. Like, filmmaking-wise, writing-wise, like, everything about it is immature. I understand he had a small budget, but it doesn't mean you have to do everything slow motion like that.
Okay.
Two is Donnie Darko.
Oh, I agree with you so much there.
It's another one. In 2001, when it first came out, I enjoyed the movie.
Yep.
But when it became like this cult, like almost church-like, you know, like feeling to it, I'm just like, it's a movie.
Yeah.
And it's a movie. It's just trying to make you feel weird, you know? Like, it's just trying to make you think in ways that it doesn't really need to.
It seems like one of those movies that leaves so many plot holes and abstractions that it wants you to fill it in so that it could appeal to any given crowd because it's your interpretation.
Yes.
And you're right. It's crap. And it's funny that you bring up Donnie Darko because one of my original bits for the show, which I probably won't end up doing because I'm giving it away right now, and ultimately it wouldn't be that entertaining. I was going to play a game called Explain to Me Why Donnie Darko is Good. And as soon as someone started talking for 10 seconds, I'd just hang up on him and say wrong.
Wrong. No, and it's too bad because I like Richard Kelly. Like, I think he's got some talent. Southland Tales was obviously a train wreck. But I'm one of the three people in the world who really enjoyed The Box. So I still look forward to whatever he does.
Yeah. But you're right, Donnie Darko. I mean, Boondock Saints, I don't agree with you as much. I enjoyed it and still do. But Donnie Darko, I agree. But that's only two.
I know. The third one is Nightmare Before Christmas.
Really?
Yeah. I hate that movie with like a fiery passion.
Explain.
I just think it's awful. I don't like the music. I don't like the voice act. I don't like Tim Burton that much. And especially when it's all a bunch of stop motion that's explicitly his style, which is what I don't like. So it all adds up to a movie that I couldn't care less about. And it's just, I don't like that every year there's more, you know, Hot Topic kids walking around with hoodies of it and stuff. I'm just like, give it. Rake, it's garbage. And then just because he did A Corpse Bride, you know, all those people were like, it's gonna be the best movie ever, and that was garbage too.
That was far worse. Like, I like Nightmare Before Christmas. I hate Corpse Bride.
Yeah, that see, that's bad. Why I thought you'd be mad. I don't know why. I just assumed you would like Nightmare Before Christmas. Just
cause. I don't have the cult following fandom for it that a lot of people do. I think it was good. I don't think it's the best movie ever, and it's certainly not Burton's best movie, but I do enjoy it.
I mean, I understand. Everyone else does, too. I'm like the only person I know who doesn't like it, and I just can't stand it.
To each their own. Well,
the only good thing about the DVD is that it has Frankenweenie on it, and I used to love Frankenweenie.
Well, of all those three, you didn't stab me in the heart with anything. When you said something that I would hate, I thought you were going on a Batman route, so I was
Never.
Oh, I was scared. I mean, we all know Batman and Robin and Batman Forever suck, so.
Please, I'll watch them anytime, though.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even joking. Compared to Donnie Darko, I'll watch Batman and Robin like five times in a row, no doubt.
And I have watched them many times, even since, you know, the backlash, which didn't come until years later.
No.
I still watch them. You know what I mean? Like, when Batman Forever came out, I know a lot of people love that movie. I don't know when this hatred for Batman Forever came from. I know even Batman and Robin I saw in theaters. And as a kid, you know, I enjoyed it. It was a Batman movie.
Sure.
And I mean, obviously, looking back on it, they're pretty bad compared to, you know, obviously Dark Knight. But even Val Kilmer was Bob Kane's favorite Bruce Wayne ever.
He was mine as well. I have to admit that.
I love Val Kilmer. I thought he was a great Batman, too. Like, he had the perfect jawline. His voice was good. Even George Clooney, I thought it was weird. Like, I thought he had the perfect, like, face for Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his, you know, his bottom half of his face, obviously. But what's weird is, in real life, George Clooney is Bruce Wayne. Can we agree on that?
In a sense, I can agree on it.
And in the movie, I just thought he was an awful Bruce Wayne, and it didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, in real life, you're such a jet-setting, you know, millionaire playboy who never gets tied down by a woman. I mean, you are Bruce Wayne. Why is your Bruce Wayne so bad in this movie? And I just chuck it up to the script.
Well, yeah, the script was terrible and the art direction was terrible. My biggest problem with Clooney as Wayne is that he wouldn't get that stupid grin off his face, that signature Clooney grin. It's fine for every other movie he's in, but when you're Bruce Wayne, you're smiling way too much.
And he was just almost too nice.
Yeah.
Isn't that, I just thought it was weird how like sweet and whatever he was. Like, I really like in Batman Begins and Dark Knight how, you know, Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne is kind of sarcastic, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like that Bruce Wayne more.
I agree. Well, well done, Todd. I have to say, you just were right out the gate with those three.
Well, you shouldn't tell him then that we stopped recording for about a half hour while I thought about it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's probably a bad idea. No, we really didn't. Todd really came up with those quick. I want to make sure you get all the credit you deserve. You can self-deprecate all you want, but I'm going to give you props.
I thank you.
All right. This has been Stream of Consciousness right here. We are about to go into our first break before we do, and we're 40 minutes in, so good Lord, we have a long show ahead of us. As we go into our first break, there's a couple things I want to throw out to the fans. Not only do I want your feedback on other things, but I put this out on the Twitter and on the Facebook page today, too. I really want to be able to do a show that will, or a live show every now and then that will allow for call-ins, either over Skype, Ustream, Stick'em, any of those live streaming things. Justin TV, any of those. I need to know from the fans if A, there's any interest in doing that. And there are a few people on Facebook that responded that were interested. So that's cool. If there's interest in doing something like that, I need to figure out how to accomplish it from a technical standpoint. And I did get some info from Slim, who is a host over at Nerdcast Online. So I'll give them a quick plug right there. That's also another great podcast you can listen to. And he gave me some stuff that would work out for what they're doing. As far as their live show, I don't think that's going to work for us. So we would have to seek some sort of larger venue like Ustream or Stick'em or anything like that. So if the fans are interested in that, A, and B, have any technical information they can throw my way to help us accomplish that, that would be appreciated on either level. And as we go into the break now, I want to bring up another podcast friend that I recently made. He just had a commercial of me played in his last episode and gave us some props. And that is Geek Tech Live. The host over there, Chris, sent me a tweet after I had tweeted Chris Gore, and he just went out to San Diego Comic-Con himself. He had a really great episode. 89, I believe, was about Comic-Con and his experiences there, and if you're a first-time con-goer, what to look for and what to watch out for. So we can use those experiences for sure when we head up to New York Comic-Con this year, which will be a blast. But head over to Geek Tech Live and listen to that show as well. We're going to put his commercial in during the first commercial break right now. So, Todd, we're going to be back in just a moment.
Sounds good to me.
All right. We'll be back right after these words.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris, your host for Geek Tech Live, the biweekly podcast that showcases tech news, reviews of consumer products and games, and I even get to talk to some of the movers and shakers in the world of geekdom. Occasionally, I even throw in a rant or two. So drop on by to geektechlive.com. See you there.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as...
Like you and me, Hector and Todd. Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing you new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
All right, we are back, and we are going to head right into news. One of the big stories this week is that the fall season premiere dates from all the major networks have been released. They are all on the site. I'm not going to go over them all because there's a ton of them out there. So head to the site, www.thegeekgeneration.com. Check those articles out, mark your calendars, and see what you're looking for. Is there any one show in particular you're looking forward to, Todd?
Come on, let's get real here. September 24th will be the best day of all time. Smallville and Supernatural, let's do it.
Ah, yes, Smallville. I know, Smallville. If all that footage from Comic-Con really was from the first two episodes, oh my god.
Well, there's no way it's for more than that, you know? That's why it's amazing.
That's true.
Can't even get over how excited I am for that.
The other big news story this week, I know you're familiar with because you already discussed on your show, Robert Rodriguez is in talks to direct the Deadpool movie.
Wait, do you listen to my show already?
That's impressive. That's right. I know it just came out, yesterday?
Morning.
This morning?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm all over that. Yeah. Like stink on crap. I'm all over that. All right. Robert Rodriguez is in talks to direct the Deadpool movie. It has been confirmed that he's been sent the script at least. The rumor is that, yes, he's in serious negotiations, although that is still rumor. How do you feel about that choice?
I think Robert Rodriguez can do anything.
I love Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, I think he can direct any type of movie, and it's guaranteed to at least be entertaining.
Yeah, my first reaction was that if a Deadpool movie is done in the same violent, humorous tone as Desperado, then I will be perfectly happy with it.
Oh, yeah, it'd be amazing.
Yeah. Marvel has announced that 4 new anime series are debuting in 2011 on the G4 network. They will be animated by Madhouse, who is responsible for the very popular Ninja Scroll movie. Those anime series will star Iron Man, the X-Men, Wolverine, and Blade. Each series is a 12-episode arc, and those are exclusive to the G4 network. What do you think about that?
I hate anime with a passion.
Really?
Yeah, I can't stand it. Like, I hated the Animatrix. I couldn't stand the Gotham Knight or whatever that was just before The Dark Knight came out, you know? They did the same thing for the Batman, and it was terrible, awful. And I don't know, I just can't get behind, like, any of it. I don't think there's been any anime I like.
I really enjoy the animation behind anime, and they do some really amazing, beautiful things. But the stories are usually really horribly translated, and they end up being very hollow.
Yeah, see, it's just the animation I don't like.
Oh, all right.
And again, I'm one of the few, so, I mean, I'm in the minority. I don't know, I don't like the style of anime.
I don't know if you're necessarily in the minority. I mean, given the choice, I can think of plenty of animators over here. I mean, look at DC Universe's movies they've been cranking out lately. Those are amazing. I'd rather see those than anime, but I do appreciate the style of an anime movie here and there.
And even those, I haven't watched Under Red Hood yet. I have Under the Red Hood, but I haven't watched it yet. But even those, lately, because they're doing them so fast, they don't seem to be as, like, well animated. Like, I thought Public Enemies,
mm-hmm.
I didn't think the animation was very good. Like, it was very stilted. The way they moved was kind of blocky at times.
A little bit.
And, I mean, I loved the story. I thought it was great.
Well, the story's great. The character design is awesome because they actually merged
Ed McGuinness and stuff.
Ed McGuinness's style with Bruce Timm's style, and those are arguably my two favorite comic book artists. So seeing that character design was so cool for me.
But it seemed before, when they weren't coming out once a year, it was just, you know, more sporadic. Like I said, New Frontier looked, I thought, really good because, you know, they took their time. It has its own style. And, from what I've seen from Under the Red Hood, I like how it really looks, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Only time will tell.
That's true. And speaking of which, one of the other stories is about one of those Superman, Batman, Apocalypse. That's the next one we're going to be seeing.
I'm excited.
On the Batman Under the Red Hood extras, there is a first look, a 12-minute first look at Superman, Batman, Apocalypse. And it seems to follow the story very closely in the same way that Public Enemies did. Do you think we're going to see more of the Superman-Batman stories continued out throughout the DC Universe online movies?
Online movies?
Did I say online?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of the game DC Universe Online.
Oh, okay.
I guess it just kind of merged in there.
I thought there would be online movies, and I had no idea what you were talking
about. Sorry, I meant to say animated. You're right. Yeah, the DC Universe animated movies, this will be their second Superman-Batman one. So,
well, I mean, they're the most recognizable. So it would make sense. And they're good, you know, like, especially if there's a good story behind it. I mean, just look at, like, the animated series. They both lasted long enough that because people loved them, especially when they crossed over.
Oh, yeah. That's actually one of the Superman-Batman trades are one of the few that I still collect regularly because the stories are that good.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see here. Walt Disney Pictures has attached Elizabeth Banks to a live-action Tinkerbell movie, simply titled Tink. It is supposed to be a romantic comedy that will play with the mischievous nature of Tinkerbell. I don't know about this one.
Yeah, I have no desire to see that at all.
Yeah.
As adorable as Elizabeth Banks is, I've kind of had my fill of her for the past few years. Yeah. She's been everywhere, and I've had enough. Like, what with her being on 30 Rock and Modern Family in the same season?
Yep.
I don't need it.
Do you listen to FitzDog Radio at all?
I do not.
Okay. One of the games Greg Fitzsimmons plays on FitzDog Radio is a game called Half a Man. And it's a really great concept where he wants people to write in two actors that kind of occupy the same space in your brain. They're almost interchangeable. Like, the example they always give is Jeff Bridges and Jeff Daniels. They just kind of occupy that same space in your mind, you know?
I don't. Okay.
Okay. Don't necessarily agree with
Jeff
that
Bridges.
One.
I love Jeff Bridges, so I don't really equate the two at all.
Oh, okay. Well, they bring up a lot of these, and one of the ones that I wrote in from that I thought is Elizabeth Banks and Rachel McAdams. I find that in any given role, you can almost interchange them, and it's not like a huge drastic change.
It wouldn't be, but I think Elizabeth Banks is too goofy.
That's true.
I mean, she can do the straight part, obviously. I mean, right. W and that stupid horror movie that came out recently. But in almost every other movie where it's not a drama at all, yep. She's playing the exact same character. I feel like Rachel McAdams, who I love, by the way, is pretty different in everything she's in.
Yeah, that's true.
And I love Red Eye.
Here's the other important question. Rachel McAdams, blonde or brunette?
I wrestle with this every day.
I'm putting you on the spot way too much today, aren't I?
I think I'd say brunette.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, next news story. Young Justice is a new show from the WB coming to Cartoon Network. There was a sneak peek unveiled at San Diego Comic-Con. It's basically going to be the usual superhero stuff they described, along with dealing with teenage issues. Hopefully, it doesn't look as kiddy as Teen Titans did. It does look to be a step up from that. Have you seen anything about it?
No, I actually thought it would be too much like Teen Titans, so I didn't even think anything of it.
Oh, okay. Well, I watched the footage, and the animation is nowhere near as, I guess, I know it's a cartoon, but I'm still going to use the adjective cartoony and goofy. It's not anything like that. It seems
to
be.
So it's not like Teen Titans. Yeah, Teen Titans had too much of a almost anime feel, actually, that I didn't like.
That's true. They did get, like, the teardrops on the forehead and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, after Pokemon became popular, all the cartoons seemed to be dominated by that style for a while.
It's true.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing to keep an eye out for. Another one that there was a sneak peek for from the WB is the Looney Tunes show. The Looney Tunes are actually coming back, although this time the show will be like an animated sitcom. The main storyline will take place with Bugs and Daffy as roommates, and there will be shorts mixed in. For instance, there will always be Merry Melodies musical shorts, as well as CGI-generated Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner shorts.
I hate it.
Because of what?
Everything. I love Looney Tunes, and that I don't like that at all.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like this whole sitcom-y thing and CGI animated. I heard that they were going to show shorts in front of WB movies with Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, and I thought that was kind of cool, but I don't need CG. I mean, I don't know. I don't know why they keep trying to do this. It failed a few years ago when they tried to do that extreme Looney Tunes.
That was a terrible idea.
It was awful. It was so bad. Just
it had nothing to do with the essence of the characters.
Yeah, and in the essence of the character, in the old, I just actually bought a DVD of like one of those spotlight collections of Looney Tunes because I love Looney Tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And there were never stories throughout the episode, you know? It was just a bunch of shorts, and that's how I liked it. I don't need roommates with funny little things in between.
True. And I saw the footage of the Coyote and the Roadrunner shorts. I don't know if they're totally finished and polished, but they're definitely done in a much quicker style than the movie shorts would be, and they do look very cheap animation-wise.
So stupid. I don't know why. Like, what's the point? Like, who? I don't see how that's going to attract an audience.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm confused why, like you said, a lot of things are going in the direction of CG where half the charm was the animation.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like CG is just taking over everything in the same way 3D is going to start, or already has started infecting Hollywood and cheapening that as well.
Yeah, and video games now.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see how that comes out. All right, here's a news story I'm especially irked about, so get ready.
I'm ready.
If you purchase NBA Elite, which is a new EA Sports game for PS3 or Xbox 360, you'll receive a one-time download code to get NBA Jam. Seems real cool. EA said, quote, NBA Jam is only available with the purchase of NBA Elite 11. There are no plans to sell it as a standalone product on the Xbox 360 or PS3 at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if you are a old school gamer and NBA Jam fan.
NBA Jam is amazing.
Yeah.
I was actually going to buy it for Wii.
Oh, see, you have Wii, so you have that option.
Yes. But the only thing I don't like about this is I have no problem buying NBA Elite 11, like, at all. I play NBA 10, NBA Live 10 on my PSP, mm-hmm. and it's fun. You know, it really occupies my time if I'm doing anything or going somewhere. So I have no problem buying it. The thing that bothers me is that it's not the full game.
The NBA Jam's not the full? No, it's not. I know it's not.
And that's the thing I don't like. I don't understand why, if they're going to do that, why not give you the full game?
Yeah, there's one mode they're going to be missing. I think they're making the play that NBA Jam must have some exclusive contract with Wii, and they're making the play that they're not going to give you the full game, but they are going to give you that as a bonus, hoping that fans who don't have Wiis will still go out and get it. Like, I'm an NBA Jam fan. I'm not ready to shell out $60 for NBA Jam on PS3.
Yeah. But but you're also getting two games.
True, but I have no desire to play. I'm not a big sports game guy. I think the closest thing I play is Tecmo Bowl Throwback or SmackDown versus Raw. Yeah. So that's as close as I get to sports games, really. So
yeah, the last sports game I actually bought, actually, no, I bought an MLB game. But before that, the last sports game I bought was the Legends of WrestleMania.
How was that? Because I played the demo at New York Comic Con last year, and I didn't really like it.
I destroyed it. I loved every second of it.
Really?
Yeah, I love that game.
Have you seen the footage for WWE All-Stars? Because that seems to be in the same vein.
It's good. Well, and it's also by like one of the original makers of NBA Jam. So it has that very cartoony feel to it.
Right. And here's another interesting thing, too, I heard. Not only is THQ going to come out with Raw vs. SmackDown, as they normally do, or SmackDown vs. Raw, whatever. They're going to come out with WWE All-Stars. And then later on in another quarter, they're going to announce another new wrestling franchise game that's going to be not a simulation like the one and not as arcadey as WWE All-Stars. They really have given no clue, but they said it will be closer to All-Stars, so I don't even know what they have planned.
I don't know. I'm just really excited for All-Star. The only thing that sucks about the WWE All-Star is that, like, I don't think there's any way they can have Hulk Hogan or anyone like that because of them being in TNA now.
That's true. They do have a lot of legends that they said will be in the game, but you're right. People that have gone over to TNA probably don't have. I'm pretty sure Hulk owns his likeness, so
yeah,
there's no way he's gonna show up, I don't think, which is too bad. All right, last story we have in the news block here is regarding the Scott Pilgrim versus the World game that's coming out August 10th. So look for that next week on PSN.
PS3.
Whoa. I'm so very excited. Pumped about that. I think it's only gonna be $10 or $15 too, which is great.
I just bought Flower for $10 and it was well worth it.
I have not. I downloaded the demo, but I haven't played it yet.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. How long playtime do you think that would give someone?
I think it only gave me about 2 hours.
Yeah.
But I could play it endlessly.
Hmm.
Like, I'll definitely go back and play it over and over and over again. It's so relaxing. It's so beautiful. It's just a great game.
I have a feeling the demo will hook me.
It hooked me. I bought it as soon as I was done with it. Yeah. It brings you, like, it shows you a trailer and it brings you right to the PSN, you know, network, like the most demos do.
Right.
And I instantly hit purchase. There wasn't even like a thought that crossed my mind. I just had to keep playing.
So maybe I'll put off playing the demo for a little while until I'm in better monetary shape.
Yeah, it's probably for the best because even my fiance loved watching me play it.
Well, then when we both buy Scott Pilgrim vs. the World the game next week, we're going to have to play because I'm pretty sure there's online multiplayer.
Definitely. I'd definitely be down with that.
Sweet. Well, the news item about that game that came out just the other day is that there will be a secret zombie survival mode. Edgar Wright posted on his YouTube channel a trailer revealing the mode. Basically, all you have to do on the menu screen of the game, enter the code down, up, right, down, up, right, right, right. And you will enter a zombie survival mode.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
He's in Boston right now.
Is he?
Yeah, he tweeted earlier that he was at the Newbury Comics in Boston.
And who else is in Boston? Oh, Anna. I don't know if she says it Anna or Anna. I think it's Anna. Anna Kendrick, who's also in Scott Pilgrim. So they must be doing something in Boston.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Maybe they're doing Well, they're doing screenings all the time, so maybe they're like doing that and like going on the radio or something.
That'd be really cool. I didn't even realize that she was a Boston native.
Is she really?
She is. She was like, "Oh, it's good to be back home."
Oh, weird. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but that makes me that much more of a fan. See, I saw her on Twitter and her picture, I don't know if you've seen it. She has her Twitter address on a piece of paper to like verify that it's her, as a lot of celebrities do. But the hook for me is that she was wearing a Batman logo t-shirt. So I was like, well, I have to follow her now. So now she's clearly a Batman fan. Even if she's just wearing the shirt, that's enough for me. And she's a Mass resident. So I think I'm in love.
Sounds good to me. She was fantastic in Up in the Air.
Oh, that was one of my favorite movies of last year. And she was great in it.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And if she's definitely in Scott Pilgrim too, which I have a feeling is going to be right up there with my movies this year. So we might have to make another movie date for that one.
And yet you don't like Michael Cera.
See, here's the thing.
I don't want to hear this bullcrap right now, right?
It's not that I don't like Michael Cera. It's that he plays the same role in every movie. But the reason I'm excited for Scott Pilgrim is not only because it looks great. I also think it's the appropriate time for that role in this movie.
Listen, he can't control how he is. And also, while we're on the topic here,
because
this infuriates me. People need to stop calling, what's his face, Jesse Eisenberg, Michael Cera Light, because he's been around longer, and he's been doing that shtick for longer. So get off his dick. This is the opposite. It makes me so mad people keep calling him that, because he was in this movie I love called Roger Dodger in like 2002 or 3, you know, and it just bugs me.
Point taken.
And Michael Cera is fantastic in Youth and Revolt. He's so good in that. His alternate personality is genius. So good.
I don't even know if I want to get into that argument right now. I didn't like Youth and Revolt.
Because it was the best movie of the year?
No, I just felt... I felt Youth and Revolt had every single independent movie stereotype in it.
That's weird, because usually that type of thing bugs me too, but I don't know.
I was really annoyed by all the transition animations and stuff like that.
Yeah, I didn't really care for the animation either.
Yeah, I just felt like it was an indie movie. Was it even an indie movie?
Yes, I think it was very indie.
Oh, okay. Because it had every single indie movie stereotype in it, I thought.
And I love Justin Long in it. I thought he was hysterical.
Okay, he was funny. I'll give you that. He was really good in that.
I like Justin Long. I think he gets enough respect.
I was just going to say the same thing. I think he's really underrated. Waiting is such a great movie, and he's awesome in it.
Yeah, he is really good in it.
All right, so that'll wrap up our news block. And before we go to our next commercial break, which will feature the Dangerous Memories commercial, haha.
Do we really need it, though, with me on it? Come on, let's get real here.
Yeah, I know. I forgot to put you in there. Well, am I going to use the Todd bumper when Todd's on the show?
I don't see why not.
I really like the way Hector says Dangerous Memories.
Every time we recorded it, he sang it.
Really? See, I don't know. I don't know what it is about the way that he does that. I like it.
It's good times.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll use yours in the first commercial break, because I feel I have to use Hector's for the second one at this point, because we're talking about it.
Don't use mine at all.
I could intro the show with yours.
No, I'm on the show. We don't need
to. All right. Fine. I'm trying to give you way too many plugs. Fine. All right. Well, before we go to our next commercial break, then, I'm going to remind the fans or listeners or whoever you are one more time that the poll question this week is, what is the most overrated movie ever created? Please send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. When we come back, we will be going into Avatar. The spoiler room. Avatar?
Yeah, I don't like Avatar.
It's not Avatar Day.
I don't know if I just didn't hear you say that. That was the poll question, but that's my answer.
The most overrated movie is Avatar, in your opinion?
Yeah. Yeah.
I require an in-depth email from you for next week.
Well, I know you like that movie, so I'm sorry, but it's just I think
it's okay. Incredible. Again, that's not one that's stabbing me in the heart. I don't have that much of a loyalty to it.
All right, good.
All right. So when we come back from our commercial break, we're going to step into the spoiler room. Don't worry, you don't have to tune out right away. You can if you want to, but we'll give you a quick little intro before we step in. So, yeah, when we come back, Inception time. I'm very excited. Hello, listeners. Do you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the Geek Generation while shopping on Amazon.com? Well, then I have good news for you, because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You have spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine.
Hi, this is Hector from Dangerous Memories, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
Welcome back to The Geek Generation. We are about to step for the first time into my newly crafted segment, The Spoiler Room. I even built a whole room right here, and there's a little security keypad over here that I'm going to push in and see if we can get in. I'm going to warn the fans right now, too. Once we step into the spoiler room, and this will be from now on, we're doing this at the end of the episode for a reason. We're going to talk heavily about the movies. I'm sick of all these shows that give reviews and never really talk about it. I listen to shows because I've watched the movie already, and I want to be a part of a discussion about it. So as we step into the spoiler room, we're going to talk about Inception, and if you haven't seen it, we're going to ruin the movie for you. So this is your time to tune out, and this is your warning. So we're going to punch in these little buttons right here.
All bets are off. No more funny business.
That's right. And we are going straight into the spoiler room.
Access granted. Welcome.
So now that we are inside and securely in this vault that I do call the spoiler room.
It's a lot smaller than I thought it would be.
Yeah, well, I have a limited budget. So, while we're in the room, the first thing we should do is probably give our initial take on the movie. And we've seen it. I know I've seen it twice at this point. You've seen it three times, right?
Correct.
Okay. First point I want to make is that I've seen Ellen Page in lots of movies before, but she never looked this good. Yeah, that's what I took away from this amazing movie, is that Ellen Page looked really good in it.
She looked all right.
Yeah, well, I don't know. In this particular movie, I thought she looked hot, and I can't necessarily say that in any other movie I've seen her in so far.
I mean, she definitely did look better than she did in the other movies, but I wouldn't say hot.
Okay. Well, other than that, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, it is awesome to see him in a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, because I almost feel like he is the new Leonardo DiCaprio. He's this young rising actor that I feel will be the DiCaprio of the next series, if you know what I mean.
Agreed.
So that's great. He's fantastic in it. They're both amazing in it. And the last major point is, who the hell chooses these character names?
Yeah, the character names are really weird.
Yeah, Ariadne, which is Ellen Page's character, and I did a little research on, means, I believe, Lady of the Labyrinth or Creator of the Labyrinth or something like that. So I understand the reference, but that made it a little harder to follow. I don't like it when they do that.
And also, after the first time I saw it, I didn't remember any of their names.
That's very true. I
With
tried...
the exception of Arthur, yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, yep. I didn't remember any of their names.
Well, yeah, he's the only one that has a normal name. Even Cobb, they really didn't use his first name that much.
They kept saying Dom or Tom. I couldn't tell if it was Dom, like Dominic, or Tom as in Thomas. I couldn't tell which one.
Right. So what are your thoughts on, as far as like a review of it go?
Well, this movie's amazing. We can start there. Well, and yeah. Every time I saw it, which was three times, obviously, I found a new performance that I loved more.
Okay.
Like the first time I saw it, you know, I was obsessed with Joseph Gordon-Levitt because that's how I am.
Right.
The second time, I couldn't take my eyes off Marion Cotillard. I thought she was breathtaking. I thought she was amazing. I thought her performance was incredible.
And so creepy.
She was terrifying. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. She was terrifying and she was just fantastic. And then the third time I watched it, I really, really liked Ken Watanabe and Ames.
Okay. Yeah, Ames was awesome, or Ames, yeah. Or right, however you say it.
Yeah. Tom Hardy, I think his name.
Yep.
And, I just loved, I mean, Ken Watanabe and Tom Hardy were just fantastic, and they weren't underused, but I just would have liked to have seen more.
Agreed. Although my one issue with Ken Watanabe, I love his hypnotic voice, but at the same time, he's really hard to understand at times.
He was the first time I saw it, but once I saw it again, I got everything he was saying.
Yeah. Although I do want to watch it with, I was kind of holding up my virtual remote control to turn on the subtitles at times. There were still even, like, I'm sure it would be the same thing the more I watch it. I would probably slowly interpret that, but
well, yeah, when he's in that,
yeah, when he's in the helicopter at the beginning there, I really was just lost the first time I saw it. I had no idea what the hell he was saying.
Yeah.
So, the Inception is, I don't know, in my opinion, it's the best movie I've seen so far this year. What do you think?
I'd say it's tied with Toy Story 3.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really, really, really like Toy Story 3.
Hmm. Interesting. I liked it, too. I just think it's, like, a peg below Inception for me.
Well, that's you.
Right. Well, yeah. Sure. Let's see what the listeners said, because we did get a few listener emails about this, which is kind of cool.
I love listener emails.
Yeah. Let's see. The first one comes in from our buddy Scott the Toomey. Scott Toomey. What's that?
I don't think that's his name.
Scott the Toomey?
Yeah.
The Scott Toomey?
There you go.
All right. Scott Toomey said, I had the opportunity to check out Inception the weekend that it came out, and my reaction was nothing short of a full-fledged markout. I loved everything about it. In fact, I liked it so much that I actually went home and looked up the best picture winners of the last 10 years and decided that I liked it more than every single one of them. So I guess you could say that for me, it was the best movie I've seen in the last 10 years. That is a bold statement.
It's true.
I can't necessarily say that I love it that much, but wow, that's impressive.
I would have to see the list.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it's probably better than the last 10 Best Picture winners, but it's definitely not the best. I don't even think the Best Picture winners are the best pictures of the year, so I can't say it was the best one I've seen in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's usually how it is.
The next one comes in from a new writer, but a friend of mine, Robin Streb. She says, I loved Inception. I found it easy to follow, and being able to tell the different levels of dreams was made pretty easy because of the difference in location. Asleep in the van, hotel, they were just in suits, and then the snow everywhere. I loved slash hated the ending, not knowing whether the top was going to topple over or not. I'm leaning towards it toppling because in a dream, the top didn't wobble at all. So there's our first guess at a theory. And I have to ask this of you, because I had this experience when I saw it for the first time. At the end, when it's spinning, did you not just, in your mind, I was going topple, 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 fall over, fall over, fall over, like in my head over and over.
I wasn't saying it over and over. I just assumed that was going to happen.
Yeah.
I was like, and it's going to topple.
You thought it just was going to?
Yeah.
So you were actually shocked when it didn't?
I wasn't shocked. I thought it was a really cool ending.
Yeah. I wasn't necessarily sure which direction it was going, but I was rooting for him so much that I was saying it, like, fall over, fall over, fall over.
I just couldn't get over the amount of audible, like, gasps in the theater every time I saw it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, people were like, oh my god, that's how they're going to end it? And I'm like, what are you... It's an awesome ending.
Yeah, even the time... The most recent time we went to the IMAX, there were definitely people that were seeing it for the first time. And as it's holding on to the number one spot in the theaters, still, people are still going, which is so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I like. It's great to see people supporting an ambitious Hollywood movie instead of recycled garbage.
Or reboots.
Oh, yeah. Next email comes in from somebody who I saw it with the first time, Jeff Flaherty. In reference to the music, he said, I believe it also lends some more credence to the It's Still a Dream theory. There's that video out on YouTube that has the song slowed down, and they said that the song they're listening to that they use for the kicks
is... The Edith Piaf song?
Right. It's slowed down, and it's used as an element of the score, which is really cool. So he thinks that it adds a little bit to the It's Still a Dream theory at the end. That's his definite believed theory. He also says, along with the kids in Kane's clothes, the lack of defined characterization of the crew, the random jump from location to location, the fact that you never see all of Leo's plane ticket, Kane's fantasy comment, and of course the spinning top. Of course, I also think Nolan wants people to argue the ending, and there probably is no right answer. So that's Jeff's take on it. He made some good points in there. I don't necessarily agree with all of them. We do have one more email that's a little lengthier. So I'll read the last email and then we can go into the three major theories and kind of dissect those and give our opinions. How about that?
Sounds perfect.
Okay. Last email says, and they actually knew you were going to be on this week, as it's addressed to Rob and Todd, a.k.a. Rod. I don't know if I like that as a nickname for us.
I hate everything about it.
Yeah, I would prefer Tobert even, because Rod is just, that sounds wrong.
Yeah, I don't like it. But I love meat candy.
Yeah. Callback. A second viewing of Inception let me pick up on some of the smaller details that I missed with the first viewing. One of which is with the film's music. By music, I don't mean the score. I'm referring to the music played during their kicks. Did you notice that it's the same song every time? I couldn't help but wonder if the song was chosen for a reason. It turns out that it's, and I cannot pronounce this, so.
Edith Piaf?
No, that song was featured in a movie about that person. But the song name is like Non Je Ne Regret Rien by Edith Piaf.
Okay.
Whatever it is. And I'm French, so I should probably be able to say that, but whatever. Better known for the song La Vie en Rose. Three things interesting here. One, Marion Cotillard-Mall played Edith Piaf in the 2007 film La Vie en Rose, for which she won an Oscar for Best Actress, the same year that Ellen Page, Ariadne, was up for Juno. Interesting coincidence, and I know it's a coincidence because the director said so, but it is an interesting one still. Two, song name I can't pronounce, translates to No, I Regret Nothing, a sentiment echoed in Inception. Okay. Three, Hans Zimmer confirmed that the blaring foghorn-like noises interspersed in his score are in fact slowed down pieces of song name I can't pronounce. I'm doing that. And we just kind of talked about that a little bit. The last thing is that it wouldn't surprise me that these little facts add up to something greater, and I can't help but feel that Zimmer's score is a clue to solving Nolan's riddle. In a subtle way, it's as if we, the audience, are included in the action, as if we are being reminded to wake up too. Your gal pal in pink, Megan. So, again, great points. Things
she
that we...
She noticed all that while watching it the second time? Is that what she said?
Yeah, and...
How is that possible?
I was wondering the same.
I don't
even
think that's physically possible.
I was wondering the same, and I talked to her about it before the show, actually. She's very familiar and a big fan of that kind of music. So I was like, wait, how the hell would anyone know that just from listening to it? But everyone's got their interests that they're into.
The only thing I was just like, how would knowing that, how would watching it a second time know that it's a slowed down version? And then how would watching it a second time all of a sudden snap in that she was in La Vie en Rose and got nominated for and won Best Actress? And she was
clearly that involved some research. That doesn't just come to mind out of nowhere, I'm sure. So
this whole thing is unraveling.
Uh-oh, the tapestry. And you know you're going to get some hate mail because of that, right?
Oh, yeah, she's furious now.
All right, let's tackle the tough stuff. There are three, I could say, arguably prevalent theories as to what the ending actually meant. Theory one is that the entire events of the movie are a dream. Theory two is that the ending takes place in a dream and everything else that happened before it was real. Theory three is that the ending takes place in reality, as did the parts that we know weren't dream states in the rest of the movie. So if we tackle the first one first, the entire events of the movie are a dream. Do you agree with that? Like everything was a dream? No. For what reason?
It wouldn't make any sense because it would be dumb if the whole thing's a dream. It would be dumb that there was no point of reference as to when what's awake and what's not.
True.
And that would really annoy the crap out of me if that were the case because it makes it pointless.
True, because it takes away from the whole. And I saw some people said that that technology doesn't exist, so the whole thing was a dream. I'm like, it's a sci-fi movie.
Oh my
really?
Goodness gracious. Get these people out here.
I know. Some people are just idiots. There was also the claim that the whole movie is a dream because Cobb's totem doesn't work as an effective totem anymore. It doesn't prove reality because it was originally Maul's, which I think is a stupid reason.
Yeah, because the person who has it has to be the only person alive, or not alive, but the only person who knows the exact weight and whatever of it, and Maul's dead.
Right, so Maul can't create a new totem in the next dream. I think people who have that theory just really don't understand why a unique totem is unique.
Yeah.
and what the danger of letting someone else touch it is. It doesn't matter that it was Maul's. It's the fact that Cobb is the only person who can't recreate it uniquely in another dream.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's totally out the window. So that first theory, I feel, is just the total weakest. There's no way the whole movie is a dream.
Yeah, and if it was, I think it would really lessen the impact of the movie.
Right. The second theory is that the ending takes place in a dream. Is that the Camp Urine?
No.
Sweet. So we're on board. We're in the same thing. I was almost hoping that you wouldn't agree with me because then it would make for a more interesting debate. But now I can tear the crap out of this theory and you'll agree with me.
Well, I mean, it's just the only thing that I would have agreed with, and this is what I was talking with my fiance Kate when we were walking out of it. It was just that the ending was like a little too perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's the only thing.
Right.
And especially because of how many times did you see it spin, the top spin in the dream, and it didn't wobble at all, not once.
Right, right. Like and when he spins it in the safe, that thing could, yeah. It was straight up and down the whole time.
Exactly. Or even at the end in the limbo.
Right.
When he's spinning it with Saito. Now, in the end, you can clearly see it and hear it wobbling.
Yeah.
Like, clearly.
That's true. And I actually read, we didn't stick around long enough. I don't know if you did for any of the credits that you went to go see it.
No.
There's no ending scene, but people have claimed that if you watch the whole credits, at some point near the end of the credits, you actually hear a clunk, like it's falling.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm curious about that now.
I am too.
Although it could just
be one of
those. I wonder
if it's in the soundtrack.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Because I know in the soundtrack, like, I've listened to it a lot over the past few weeks.
Yep.
And even during, like, one of the last tracks, that Edith Piaf song kind of plays ominously in the background of it.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that's just part of the soundtrack or if, like, they actually put it in there. And, like, I know this is a spoiler for another movie. It's not really a spoiler.
This is the spoiler room. You can talk about anything you want.
All right, cool. The movie The Road.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool at the end, during the end credits, you can hear life. Like, you can hear birds, you can hear, you know, bugs chirping and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, okay, cool, there's some hope.
Yeah, and I think Inception definitely ended with far more hope than it did the other, like the latter, because
yeah,
for that and more reasons, like, I have, I did my research for this, like, hardcore, and I have a ton of reasons to tear apart the theory that it ends in a dream, and I really want to, because not only do the majority of my friends think it ended in a dream, but I know I'm right and I want to prove them wrong. I love being right. I can't help it. So one of the big arguments is that the kids' clothing appears to be the same at the end. Although on second viewing for me, and this wasn't even on my research, but my research confirmed it. When I looked at the daughter in the ending sequence, I was like, her clothes look different. I think she has a white shirt on under her dress and that was not there before.
Yeah.
Other people have confirmed that is the case. That is definitely a different set of clothing. The dress might be the same, but that white dress was not there beforehand. And I feel it was just the similar clothing is a red herring device. Nolan is using that to make us think that that's a possibility, that it's a dream.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Other people claim the children haven't aged, yet you're going to see that in their face more than anything, which we didn't see till the end. And we don't know how long Cobb's been away from home.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. The third major thing is that the totem doesn't fall over. Like we said, it starts to wobble. It's not spinning.
Like very obviously.
Very obviously, right. And it's cut while it's wobbling off its straight up and down axis, so it gives us that thought. There's also people saying if it did fall, then Saito touched it in limbo anyway, so he could create a dream. However, he had no way to put Cobb under, and you can't go below limbo anyway.
Yeah.
So you can't go into a dream while you're in limbo. That's just not possible.
And why would it matter if he touched it in limbo?
Well, that's true. I actually didn't even think of that. How much... right, because the totem doesn't have the unique properties once they're in a dream.
Yeah.
Good point.
Obviously, because it spins always.
Right.
And that's when, I mean, Cobb touches it in limbo, you know, to help plant the thing in her mind.
Yep.
So I don't know why that would matter.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, and that's really when we get our look that it spins straight up and down in a dream, never falters, never wobbles, and it definitely does at the end. And that's more proof to me. Let's move on to theory three, the one that we can now prove to the people that are still calling us idiots for saying that two is wrong. The third theory is that the ending takes place in reality, which I subscribe to maybe because I'm an optimist, but I really, really think there was more evidence to support it. One of which is the thing that I just said, you can't go any deeper into limbo. So people say, how did Cobb get back on the shore in limbo to find Saito?
Yeah.
This is what I saw that I thought was a really good explanation for it. When Cobb dies in level one, drowning in the van, because remember, he gets kick all the way back out, right?
Yep.
Saito goes to limbo when he dies, essentially, in level one. You could say he died on any level, but he goes to limbo because he died in one of the dream levels. So even if Cobb left limbo, he would go back to the van where he now dies and gets tossed back into limbo. So yep. Limbo gets reset, so he's cast back on the beach. Now, since Saito is the person who spent the most recent long portion of time there, and Cobb is sharing his dream space, that's now what limbo looks like collectively for them. It's more a creation of Saito now than Cobb's creation.
Well, yeah, clearly Saito's been there for years because he's looked so old.
Exactly. And that's the reason that there's the age discrepancy, too, because yeah. Cobb got kicked back out. So even then, that brief moment of time getting kicked back out or kicked back up to the level where he died and got tossed back into limbo, Saito aged.
But also, there's not to say, I know it probably wouldn't be true, but it is not to say that maybe Leo Cobb, you know, wasn't in limbo for a really long time, because even though he didn't look old, the way he was talking and acting was as if he's been there for a really long time.
Right.
Because he was saying things like, I was supposed to talk to you for something, like talk you out of something and or talk you into something, whatever. And even earlier in the movie, like he says, we did grow old together, and it cuts to scenes that already happened, but this time they look really old.
Right. So that was a lot of people think that they were really young and then why are they old? But that's just a film. That's a film device.
Yeah. I mean, they were there for 50. I mean, he said they were old souls put back into their young bodies.
Right. We were just supposed to think that during those scenes that they showed that they were actually young, but they revealed that they were older. They do that in movies all the time. I don't know why that confused people.
Yeah. And I love that was one of my favorite parts of the movie. It almost made me cry, actually.
Yeah.
The second time I saw it, when you see the old hands holding each other as the train comes.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That was really touching. So, I mean, that's another hole in there. If the end was a dream, how did he get to that level, which had his house in it?
Yeah.
There's no possible way to get there. I don't know. Limbo never seems to have any projections except for Maul and Saito's guards, which are conscious things. So why would Cobb, like the 50 years that Cobb and Maul were in limbo, it pretty much shows that they spent it alone together. There were no other projections. So if that final scene is a dream or limbo, where did all those projections come from?
Yeah. And how come now, like, so easily he could see their faces?
Yeah. When he struggled so hard before.
Yeah. Like, it was so hard for him. You know, every time he looked at them, they ran away.
Yeah. Here's something I thought was really cool that, and I think this is very correct, that the spinning totem at the end is not so much a deciding factor. It really doesn't matter as to whether it was a dream or reality, because it is an inception in itself, but it's an inception to the audience. Because despite all of the evidence that we're stating that the end is reality and how much more likely that is, people are going to run with the suggestion that the ending is a dream because the totem isn't literally shown falling. And that concept is an inception to make us think that maybe it's a dream. So now that idea that's been put in our head
is growing in like a virus.
Is growing in like a virus. And now we're looking for all the evidence that it's a dream. How cool is that?
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I had never thought of that before, but I think it's so cool.
And also, I think it's just an awesome ending because for the first time ever, he doesn't care if it falls or not.
That's true.
Like, as soon as he spins it, he just walks away because his kids finally walk in and see him.
And someone else pointed out, too, that the totem isn't necessarily a totem because it spins or it falls. Like they said, it's about the way it feels and the weight of it in your hands. Mm-hmm. As soon as he spins it, he knows already.
Yeah.
So it's not about the fall. It's about the...
Although it kind of is about the fall, because even earlier in the movie, when he spun it, he put the gun like to his head.
That's true. You're right.
Waiting to see if it was going to topple or not.
True, true. Okay. I'll discount that one then.
And it did topple. And it made the exact same noise as it did at the end, the wobbling of it.
That's right. See, you're all over this crap. The last piece of major, major evidence is something I did not notice, and I don't know if people are just saying it or if it's really true. I have to go back and watch the movie and really take a look at this, because I didn't even think to look at it. His wedding ring. Did you hear anything about this?
No.
Okay. In the opening dream scene, Cobb is wearing a wedding ring.
Yep.
He doesn't wear one in reality, and this stays consistent throughout the movie. Anytime he's in a dream, he has the ring on. Anytime he's in reality, he doesn't have one on. And at that very last scene, he is not wearing a wedding ring.
Huh.
So that is, if that's true, which I definitely have to go back and look at, that is the strongest, most definitive piece of evidence that the ending is reality.
Almost definitely, yeah. I wish I'd heard about that before one of the second or third times I saw it.
I know, right? I kind of want to go again just to find that out.
And stay for the credits.
Yeah, so that's the majority of my notes. I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, I mean, all that, I mean, I said what I wanted to say, the reason why I think it's real.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's a little too perfect for me, but I mean, that could be described in any way, you know?
Right. And there are other things about, like, well, why wasn't his mother-in-law there with the kids if she was looking after them and blah-da-da-da-da-da. And I think those are all just kind of minutia. Like, why was Michael Caine at the airport ready to pick him up? That could be a thousand reasons why.
Well, he also said something like he was going to visit him. He said, next time you go visit him. The only thing I was wondering was how was he there to pick him up? I'd understand if he was with the kids, but how did he know of it?
Right. Well, he could have easily made the phone call and said, be on the other side just in case.
Yeah,
and
we just didn't see that. Saito made the call, he could have called.
Right. It's not that far-fetched. I don't know why people would use that as evidence.
And I heard this as a complaint, too. They were saying how all of a sudden can Saito make one call and it's all taken away? And that's a line of dialogue in the movie. He said, if this works, one call from me on the plane and you're a free man.
Right. And it doesn't matter how. It's just that's established. That's it.
Yeah.
So they're just sticking with the rules or the logic that they presented. So why not just accept it? It's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then I also have one other complaint, kind of, actually.
Yeah.
And it's not about the movie at all. It's about the people complaining about the movie. They keep saying how they hate how they take an hour and a half building up all these rules, then to just break them in the last hour.
I've heard that, too.
And it annoys the crap out of me, because that's what happens in every heist movie.
Yeah.
Every heist movie does that. They do all this stuff, and then everything goes wrong, so they have to abandon the plan.
Absolutely. And
that's what this is. This is a heist movie.
They even joked at themselves about it. Like, why am I... Arthur is like... Well,
just go and live it.
Yeah, yeah. Arthur's like... He does that all the time. Have you noticed how he breaks all the rules he set up? They say it.
Yeah, they even say it in the movie.
Right. And they, like, laugh about
it.
They're like,
it just made me so angry.
It's true. Yeah, so
but it's an amazing movie.
It is so good, so good, so good.
It's beautiful. The music is incredible. The acting is top notch. Like I said, every time I watched it, I found new actors I loved.
Yeah, I know every performance has something wonderful in itself.
And I can't wait to see Tom Hardy in more stuff.
Yeah, he was. I don't even know what I've seen him in before. I'm sure I have. I couldn't think of anything.
He was in Rock and Rolla.
I haven't even seen that. So
it's really good.
Yeah, you're right though. I'm looking forward to seeing other roles of his for sure.
He was also in this movie called Bronson that I really, really want to see, that I have on my Netflix watch instantly, that I'm going to watch soon, especially after watching that.
Yeah.
Because I heard he's phenomenal in it.
Cool. Yeah.
And I heard it's completely like 180 from what he's doing in this. Like, he's a completely different character.
That's always nice to see from an actor.
Yeah, definitely.
Unlike Michael Cera. Oh!
How dare you?
All right. I think we're just about ready to get out of the spoiler room and end this shebang.
Good. I'm getting kind of claustrophobic in here.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. All right. Next week, coming up on the show, I don't know necessarily what we're going to talk about yet, but Dave Palmacci has said he will be back to co-host with me. That text message that you heard earlier was from him thinking we were recording today. So I'm hoping that he's still going to be doing next week's show with me. If not, we'll see what happens. Anything you want to plug, Todd? I'm sure there's something.
Just Dangerous Memories.
And people can go to
Yeah, www.hectorandtodd.com or search for us on iTunes. And I want to plug my mother's birthday again because she's a great woman.
Yay, happy birthday, Todd's mom. All right. If you like the show, I ask you to please tell your friends, as I usually do. If you want to go to our site, go to www.thegeekgeneration.com. You can find all the articles we talked about in the news block in the show notes. There is a button on the site to subscribe in iTunes. Please go to that, rate the show, write a review. That increases our visibility so that other people will notice us and listen. There's a donation button, and believe it or not, we got our first $5 donation.
What?
We got a $5 donation. I would love to thank the person who sent it in, except they wrote anonymous, so I do not know who it is from.
I hate them.
Yeah, but we're taking donations so that when I go to New York Comic Con in October, I will have a digital recorder to talk to the fans and talk to the celebrities that are there, hopefully.
I'll be there.
Yeah, and Todd will be there, so I can talk to Todd. So to make that possible for me, please send in donations if you can afford to. If you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you'd like us to discuss in a future episode, send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. If you'd like to submit an article to the site, I stressed this last week, I called this place the Geek Generation for a reason. It is a community experience. If you send it in and it's good, I'll use it, whether it be an article for the site, an audio thing you want to submit, a bit, a clip, whatever, for the show. If I like it, I'll put it in the show. So please send those things in. Those can go to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So, thank you, Todd, for spending nearly 2 hours with me in what is definitely the longest of our episodes.
Thanks for having me. I would have gone for another 2 more if I had to.
Except that would be so much post-production, I don't even want to think about it. So, yeah, check out Dangerous Memories, people, and next week we will be back with Episode 7. So, until next time, I will see you later. Bye.
Wait, what happened?